David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 411. I'm your host, Steve Raker, back from a weekend tutoring the Moloids for their upcoming trivia night versus the Deviants, and here to tell you that Marvel Noise is a family-friendly podcast sponsored by nobody, where our scope is anything Marvel-related that tickles our fancy. But be warned, we have a particular fondness for the Bronze Age, given that two of us hosts grew up and started reading comics during that time. You can listen to and download episodes past and present over on marvelnoise.com and get new episode announcements and give us feedback on our Facebook or Twitter pages. This month we're making a Herculean push to finish up our ongoing New Warriors feature. Why? Well, true believer, because the third omnibus hardcover is being released with this material in it, and covering the issues I didn't have gives Andrew and Kevin something to do while I'm distracted by and redirected towards my son's spring lacrosse season. So, this episode and next, Andrew and Kevin will have installments 21 and 22. And then I'll join back in with them for the New Warriors series finale on episode 413, finishing out a run that began way back on episode 332. I mean, we got other stuff along the way, but that's what's going on in the New Warriors feature land. We're going to get this episode of Podcast Rescue started with a recent reads roundtable. But Steve, you can't have a one-man roundtable. Well, fear not, true believer. WWX Kevin and Andrew the LA Rabbit are here to back me up, as always.
It's a triangle table.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't. The Knights of the Triangle Table.
It's we sit around Captain America's shield, and we're three points of the 5-point star.
Are you number one, two, or three?
Oh no! Let's not get into this secret empire. that's the end of it all. Once you start having numbers, once three starts wishing he was one, it all goes downhill.
I want to be number eight. That guy always seemed like he had it going on.
Yeah.
I'm not a number. I'm a free man.
All right, what you been reading, Kevin? Anything good?
I've been reading this Fantastic Four. I've been waiting for Fantastic Four sites to return.
Oh, me too. That's a good show. I like that segment.
So maybe you can wrangle the crew or a new crew together at some point?
It's almost happened a couple of times.
What a tease. But yeah, this new one is by North and Corello. And it's a bit of a weird book. I was kind of comparing it against the previous one because I'm like I much have that same feeling of like hope still. I'm just like, yeah, I'm enjoying this, and I hope it, like, becomes something, like, where it's going to go. And then I'm like, well, I know what happened last time. So, but you have, like, these done-in-one type of things. And I think my favorite was the one with the Doombot City. Where they're just goofing around in town, and then Reed and Sue are there, and they're like, what's going on? And they're like, there can't be a whole city of Doombots. These people don't know they're Doombots?
Hey, listen, if there can be a whole farm of Skrull cows.
And my least favorite was the weird one where Johnny's like out by himself, doesn't have any money, tries to get a job, and then he's like, oh, I'm going to be the union man and everything. And I'm like, this is weird.
There's always a Johnny done in one.
Yeah, that's probably because I'm like the least, Johnny's the least enjoyable, which is weird because wasn't he supposed to be like the most popular, the one that can hold a book?
Well, that's because you don't like fixing up cars. Kevin. That's why.
I'm not a car guy, so yeah, like I would much prefer anyone else, I guess. I didn't expect this to turn into me rating who is the best members of the Fantastic Four in like sequential order here.
You make me want to read more of those old Strange Tales with the Human Torch stories in them.
All right, so Kevin, it was a bit different back then.
So Kevin, you've got Herbie at number one, and then
yes, Herbie from the cartoon. Or you mean evil Herbie?
Willie Lumpkin, number two.
I mean Luke Cage.
Well, I'm not going to fight you on that one.
And Ant-Man.
Sweet Christmas. She-Hulk.
And Namor with the ponytail.
He has to have the black suit, though.
Yeah, that was cool. Reed did give it to him.
Well, it mellowed him out, Steve. Like, he stopped having those weird mood swings and everything, you know. And
yeah.
It made him much nicer.
Having those, like, fins under his arms, like Black Bolt, like that. Like, I could just see, like, opening up your arms and closing them, like opening them and closing them and having them collapse and fold and open and fold would be like a nice little fidget toy.
Yeah, kind of reminded me of the old spider webs, or Morbius had a similar kind of thing. It was the era of the half cape, Steve. What happened to the glorious half cape?
I don't know. As soon as Magneto's grew to full size, it was all downhill. There goes the half cape.
You know what the best part is? Like thousands and thousands of years of history there.
In the half cape or in the Fantastic Four?
I mean, it could be both, right? I guess they're still dealing with some of the stuff that happened at the end of the other book. I'm like, I guess we're finding out what, like, I guess there is some Negative Zone business. And then you find out what entirely what the business is, I assume, since I haven't read that end of that title. But I think it's satisfying in its own way.
All right. That's a good enough start, I guess.
I guess I would say it's this sort of like the science Fantastic Four, which is fine.
Well, it should be, right?
Should be. That's the thing. I'm just waiting for that. It's weird because, you know, it was supposed to be a continuation of the book, so it's a different way to start a series.
Can they do science with, comic book confession, I have these issues, but I haven't read them yet. I want to finish out. I still haven't finished the Slot book, and I'm going to finish that title before I start in on this one. But, you know, it's okay to do science and not have it be inter-reality, interdimensional. Like, does he just fall into that trap, or like every science thing has to be an interdimensional thing?
No, because I think when Johnny's by himself, like something's going on, and he's like, well, I might not be the sharpest tool in the shed, but I know if you combine this with that, I can do something here. So it's...
All right.
Yeah, so it's some of that, too. It's not just...
You know what I mean about how, like, science is in the Marvel Universe has gotten into that, like the super science has become, like, interdimensional magic, kind of, where everyone's just doing interdimensional type of research, and it's not, you know, there's other stuff.
Yeah. No, I think people are thinking. I think people are doing stuff.
Good. All right, then. We can live to fight another day. Andrew, what do you got?
Well, as usual, I backed my way into something.
Oh.
And they finally took your advice, Super Steve, down at Marvel and embraced the seasons thing. Because at the comic shop,
oh, no.
I saw The Excellent Season 2.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, oh, this seasons. Is cool. I'll take this. So I grabbed it, gobbled it up. Now, for longtime listeners of the show, my return to really buying a lot of comics came just after Ecstatic hit the shelves and was a big success. So I sort of missed that.
Wow.
So it's really fun that most of these characters, except for Dupe, I don't know who they are. So it's really fun. And there's no, like, I mean, they give very little backstory, which I love. So it's Peter Milligan and the All Reds. And I just, I really had a blast with this. They throw you in, they give you, you know, like four sentences of what happened, but there's no, there's a new team, basically the excellent team, and their rivals with this ecstatic trying to get, you know, more followers and weird machinations and all that stuff. So the All Reds are perfect for the kind of bright, colorful comic books that you guys know I love. Like, look, I like my dark, broody stuff too, but there's something about a page just splashed with every color out of the crayon box. Plus, as if you're not familiar, they love creating characters with kind of like a one-off bizarre superpower.
Yeah.
And a goofy name. So the two and it's all about, like I said, them angling for the excellent team has their machinations, but they also want to get, you know, the viewer count. Plus, characters die. Now, not so much in this one yet, as promised, as in previous ones, but we have had some, and it was so much fun. I actually went back on the Unlimited and read season one.
Nice.
That season one, though, I disliked a little bit because they explained a lot of who these characters are. And I much preferred, like, they've added Evil Dupe, which was fun.
Evil Dupe.
And there's a floating eyeball Boom. Character that's so straight Boom. Out of, like, the Losh, you know, the Green Empress. She has that floating eyeball. Except that the character is the floating eyeball, who's bitter about being not having any other thing. Yeah, everyone just has... I mean, there's a bit of a funny subplot in the first one about the excellent team needing a teleporter, and they go through a bunch of different teleporters. So that's a regular power. But most of these are like, you know, flaming vomit and weird.
Right.
One character turns into a wall and just, so I can, it's definitely something that's not for everybody. So I would totally understand people saying it's too silly for me, Andy, there's no depth to the characters and there's no angst, and the angst is all kind of surfacey, like, oh, I love this guy and he doesn't love me type of. Yeah, I just find it's a fun mishmash of what if we had the Silver Age but put it through kind of a modern lens in a way.
Yep.
And so I'm on board. I should go back and read Ecstatic. It's just that,
yep. Thanks, Forrest.
I don't
you
know
to
I fell
back
in
to the beginning.
Fell into a weird, I kind of came back piecemeal and have been coming back piecemeal ever since. And obviously what attracted me was kind of picking up the 90s again and figuring out what went on in the 90s. And I'm still, you know, 20 years later, still trying to figure out.
What did go on in the 90s?
The Nasty Boys?
It's like our parents. Guys? It's like our parents try to remember the 60s. What the hell happened?
I mean, it has been that long now.
So, you know, my continued 20-year exploration of what happened in the 90s continues. But this, I really had fun. I think, Super Steve, them taking your suggestion of the seasons,
oh, no.
Allows for clear jumping on points.
It works with this book, particularly with this property, because they are doing this media production aspect of it, right? So, like, and they're doing it as a mini series, so rather than just being a volume two, it makes sense.
Yeah, and also, I can get all. I would certainly understand if you're like, look, Andy, I'm not going to remember from season one to season two, but considering I jumped in at season two, that's kind of the fun part. This isn't like an Agatha Christie novel or somewhere. To me, the important part isn't, there is a story about they rob Dr. Strange, the excellent team robs Dr. Strange of some spells. But that's not, for me, the charm isn't the plotting in a way. It's the environment. It's how the story unfolds.
For sure.
So I think in a more, one where you're kind of following the mystery of it or something, I can see how this structure wouldn't, that's too much of a break, you know, and I that's a fair criticism. But I think this, not only does it match with the seasons of their filming, but it also matches what I enjoy out of it. Your mileage may vary.
I think that series might have been a little bit ahead of its time when it originally came out.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I don't know if I could necessarily, like, yeah, like it's different at the time, but I mean there's a bunch of different things like that, and I'm just like, oh, this is weird, but I don't know if I gave it enough credit, even though I was reading it.
Well, also Laura Allred, The Colorist, what she does is the exact opposite. She has a very light palette. Like most of my books, it's like dark on black on the black bear and the black forest at midnight with a little bit of grays and greens or something. But this, if you just flip it next to any other book, it's so much, they're like, hey, you know, you can use light in your background, like light. So even if it's gray colors or whatever, they're very, they kind of lighten up off the page. And I think that's smart because it makes your book look way different than most of the other. And I like the other superhero, don't get me wrong, but they're really going for that. The Colorist is going to make everything dark and lots of like crazy rendering in the backgrounds and weird sunsets and all that, which is cool and everything. But I feel like this, you're not going to mistake this book for most of the other ones on the shelf.
True that. Hey, did either of you guys read the new Doctor Strange book? There's a new number one.
I intended to, but I fell asleep.
After turning the first page or before you got to the book?
No. Andrew made me read all these other comics, and then I didn't have enough strength to go on afterwards.
Well,
apparently, that's the lesson. Don't let Andrew make you read a lot of comics the day before.
Well, I'm not going to spoil any important deets anything.
But, I mean, I've heard other podcasters talk about it, so I generally have an idea what is happening.
I thought I bought it, but I can't find it in my recent stacks. So either I didn't buy it or it got misplaced. Both are equally valid options.
If you come across it, you'll know, because it's got a nice Alex Ross cover on it. And
so he's still dead.
If he's going to be doing covers, that's fantastic.
I mean, Alex Ross isn't dead. I mean,
no. No.
Well, I the way you said still made me pretty sure it wasn't Alex.
No, like, that all got resolved.
Zombie Alex Ross.
That all got resolved at the end of the Clea Strange series there. And the new creative team is Jed McKay and Pascal Ferry.
That's a good creative team.
And they very quickly, in one page, make reference to and quickly get out of Stephen Strange's last status quo without bad-mouthing it at all. It's just like, hey, this just happened, and now, like, we're here and moving on. And if anything I could say about that last series and having any lasting consequences from the series is it brought Clea back. And I like Clea a lot. And here she is back to being his, you know, wife and remaining being the warlord of New York that she proclaimed herself as during the last season. Now you got me doing the seasons of the last series. And, you know, it's got the regular supporting cast then. We've got Wong and Clea, and we even have Ghost Hound, who's now a regular across the last several creative teams. So he's here to stay, I'm happy to say. But this issue totally reestablishes Strange as, like, everyone in the Marvel Universe's go-to guy whenever they've encountered something magic, need something magic, and it shows that it's, like, a full-time job. Some people just have a panel where it's, like, Spider-Man asking for a favor of this, or Wolverine showing up with a magical arrow sticking out of his back, or I don't think that actually happens. I'm just making that up. But... There's all kinds of kooky things that just show that, like, he can just keep himself busy being intertwined with everyone. You know, he's got a lot of relationships. He's pretty established in the Marvel universe and plays a role. And now he's back to it. And that's kind of the bottom line. He and Clea also deal with an appropriate Doctor Strange-type threat. There's an interdimensional warlord that is kidnapping people and needs to be put down. It's good Doctor Strange so far. And we get a 8-page backup. The regular story is a full 22 pages, and then there's an 8-page backup with art by Andy McDonald that showcases the last Agents of Wand, the S.H.I.E.L.D. Magic spinoff group there. There's like three or four of them left. But don't worry, it ties into the regular story that preceded it by the time it's done. So all in all, a good first issue, and Jed McKay is showing that he is one of us again, and that he knows these characters and likes them a lot, and he doesn't need to necessarily tear them apart to try to come up with some sort of narrative. He can build them up, and there's story there, too. Cool to see the Doc in action.
The Doc is in.
Right?
I just thought of Doc and how to for some reason. The Doc is in, and then I'm like, what is wrong with me?
What's up, Doc?
Well, you love that heavy metal, Kevin. Docking is your band.
Oh, jeez. Weren't they in some kind of heavy metal? Was it them? There was some like computer ad, and it's like, if you don't have antivirus or something, it's like Dokken is looking at your computer and they're gonna really mess it up.
Not Dokken.
So you need this antivirus software on your computer.
It's anti-Dokken.
So silly.
Got another one, Kevin?
Yeah, that probably because I knew I was gonna talk about X-Men, and then my brain went to Dokken, which isn't Draken. Dokken. Yeah, the X-Men books have been pretty great. We're all mired in this Sins of Sinister right now. And I guess if you like Mr. Sinister, I mean, I feel like I've always liked Mr. Sinister. Like all the way back to like the X-Men animated series.
Oh, all the way back to that.
Well, I think that's probably where I first encountered Mr. Sinister. Because I know some people are like, that series is terrible. And then I rewatched it, and I'm like, yeah, it's very specifically a thing. But I think some of those episodes do a decent adaption and a decent primer for what the X-Men is.
Hey, if it got people into X-Men, I think it's got to be all right.
You know? Yeah, it's sort of like the G.I. Joe cartoon type of thing. Like, I had gotten a couple issues of X-Men, and I wanted to get into X-Men, but then I'm like, oh, what's really the entry point, right? And it's like you can use the Marvel cards or, I don't know, some video games or a cartoon or whatever. Then you're like, oh, I want to see more of these guys. And I feel like some people didn't take Mr. Sinister seriously, but the fans certainly have taken Mr. Sinister seriously. So it's like, well, I guess we got to use Mr. Sinister again. He's pretty popular.
He, for me, his first appearance and retconning into the Marvel Universe happened all while I was out of comics. So when I came back and read the back issues, I was like, what? Like, they're totally retconning this guy as if he was around since the beginning. And but I was like, this is so lame. Whatever. And just, you know, went on to look at the Silvestri art, basically. And it's funny that he's stuck around as long as he has, since the initial role he played was very specific.
Yeah.
And I particularly like what happened with him, like when they tied him into the Victorian times and all that stuff. That,
yeah.
Is where the character started to breathe. And particularly in the last few years, before the Hickman material even, I think there's been some pretty good Sinister stories, including the gender swapping stuff.
Yeah, there was the stuff, and I remember in Gambit, I believe it was.
Oh, right. He worked for Mr. Sinister all along, right? Or worked for Apocalypse, or I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, there was a, and then there was a bunch of traitor. Apocalypse stuff.
The traitor.
And then there was, then there was the Carrie stuff, yeah. And then, like, Gillen just sort of took that and kept on spinning it.
And yeah, now
we get the modern Sinister rock. You just knew they put him on the council, then you're like, oh. Like, he doesn't really hide that he's like been a villain the whole time. And now he was just coming up with ways of just messing up the X-Men whenever he wanted. And he found out a way that he can just retry. So he's like, oh, I only killed 50% of the X-Men this time. And it's like, literally, you see his little map there, and he's crossing off names and going, okay, if I killed Hope and I killed Mystique, this is what happens. So next time, I got to retry. And you're like, what is happening? So, like, he eventually succeeds, but then he sort of doesn't. Like, he succeeds in what he wants to do, because you get, like, the stories are, like, 10 years after, like, 100 years after, 1,000 years after.
That's where I started getting lost.
Well, it sort of plays on some of that, like,
No More
Fox
Mutants.
Fox stuff. But the thing is, you think he's got it made. Like, oh, he got to reset the whole timeline, and we get all these crazy characters and everything. But then he goes back to, like, his lab and stuff like that. Or, his lab, in quotes. And he's like, someone's stolen my stuff. And he's been too good at playing his game and getting all these other Sinisters around. Because, you know, there's, like, one that's into the cape, one that's into this. And, like, the X-Men are becoming Sinisters. He's, like, replacing them. And he's got this all going on. But then they're like, hey, we're our own Sinisters, too. So, like, someone steals his lab. And he's like, how come people are stealing my stuff now? So, like, the prime Sinister, if you will, he's just like, what's happening? Like, people are out to get him. So it's like, yeah, you succeeded, but almost too well. And now, I don't know. We're going to get everything back together. Because if he was the guy that's supposed to put things back together, I'm like, he's not the guy. Like, you have all everything else going on. Oh, it's so wild. And Sugar Man shows up in a flashback panel. I'm like, it's Sugar Man.
Oh, God.
I do love that you're like, that guy shows up for 2 seconds.
Yeah, you are the Sugar Man fan.
I'm... I mean, I don't think it's ever been really great in modern times when he shows up for, like, a whole story or an arc or whatever. But it's just hilarious whenever he's just there in the background or something. It's sort of like I want Dupe there filming stuff or whatever. It's like, hey, it's Dupe! And then when they had the Marvel Legend where you had to assemble all the parts to put Sugar Man together, I assembled that.
Oh,
he's
God.
Such a unique visual. All the arms and the face and the tongue and everything. Hmm. Kind of Modokian, I guess.
Yeah, yep. I would say. Yep. In that family. Yeah.
Evil Dead 2-ish, like the big face in the doorway.
But it's just like crazy that like that's one of the legacies of like Age of Apocalypse, like Sugar Man. Like, he was pretty big.
I didn't like Age of Apocalypse.
I think it's a teaser because Andrew told me he Andrew tried to read it, and I think it broke his brain, and he wasn't
good.
These
are the X-Men things I don't like.
I read the event on the Unlimited, and it was definitely interesting. I can see at the time how it might have thrown people for a loop, though, if you were enjoying the original characters.
I liked the art. I liked the idea. I liked how they changed the titles, changed each title just for that time period and everything, and how that made the stands look completely different at the comic store for a little while. All of that was really cool. I just didn't dig the story, and I'm not a big fan of the big alternate universe-y stuff all the time.
I feel like none of them have been as good as whenever they've done it. Oh, well, we'll do this instead. I feel like they've never been able to really do that again, which is weird because like you're playing off of something else, but for some reason you were able to spin it a different way and it worked out, and I can't explain why. Like some of those things don't hold up or whatever, or you can't go back to them. Like I remember going back to like the original Deadpool like miniseries and everything, and I'm like, I don't understand.
All roads go back to Joe Mad.
Yes.
Well, because they have to release so far ahead, you would know when it's ending and when it's like there's no. It's pretty hard to keep like a multi. You might be able to keep one book, you know, your Walking Dead ending secret or whatever, but it'd be hard to have a whole line shift without letting people know at the previews point what's happening.
See, I wasn't getting previews catalog, but I remember one of my friends showing me the previews catalog. Look, they canceled all the X-Men. It's the number one selling book in the industry, and they just canceled the titles. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, no, we knew it was happening. At the time, it was just...
Well, there's those ads in Wizard Magazine, too, with the fold-out. And it's like, yeah, was it the X-Men are dead or something? And it's like, yeah, they never began because they...
Professor X got shot.
Yeah, and everything. So there was like, things, but it was just... It was just wild.
It was a butterfly effect story.
The only thing I feel like you could have... That... within like since then where you would have been like maybe if you didn't have previews is the whole Hickman Secret Wars thing where they just canceled every single book,
right?
Like that was on that level, like
for sure.
Yeah, like you how often does that happen?
That was great. We liked that.
Yeah,
one.
Like, try to do it, but like yeah, you can't. It's not like you can repeat that every year.
No, and also it happened to deliver, but
yeah.
Imagine if we didn't have enjoyed that, it would have been a sad, like, oh, it's, you know, a couple of months of us being bummed out.
Oh. Yeah. You got the mic, Andy. Keep rolling with it.
All right. A brief interlude before I get to my book. At a recent show at WonderCon, Scott Koblish was there. Artist that we like, who's known for Deadpool, also on sister show Indie Noise. We talk about a lot of his work, and he was there, and they have him and Jerry Dugan have a new Image book, but he had a short box full of comps that he was signing. Like they're just beat up comics, and it was like 3 for $10 or something like that. So I'm like, well, I like to, he didn't have anything that I didn't have already. So I like to give somebody a couple bucks. So I flipped through and I wanted to, I don't know if you guys can guess the 3 books I had. So I'll tell you them and you'll see how likely it was on the Andy scale. I got him to sign his Marvel. Now these are just, you know, like they're not 9.8s, but they're not thrash completely. They're just been sitting in his short box for, you know, decades.
Hey, Kevin, Kevin, I'm hearing a lot of excuses before we get to even any yeah, books here, aren't you?
Yeah.
All right. Marvel Adventures Iron Man #1. Had to get that because it's Fred Van Lente was the writer.
Nice.
So. Oh, yeah, that's some good stuff in there.
I like that Marvel Adventures line.
Me
I really
too.
Thought I've picked up a bunch on the cheap because they used to have those little mini digests and they'd always be on sale at places. And they were just
the
fun.
One where the MODOK heads, the Avengers are MODOKs.
Yeah, and they had some good artists on the books here and there. When you see all, like the Patrick Scherberger was on the Spider-Man books, or occasionally you'd see like Ron Lim do a book. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, and they felt throwbacks to kind of 80s books, relatively safe as far as you know, the body count was low and stuff. Just fun, silly, goofy superhero books, which I love. For my value pick, I got Spider-Girl 100. Because, nice. You know, it's like a
with the big a giant.
Yeah, and it was a big, thick book. And I'm like, ooh. That. And now my last one, this is why I want to mention it. And I did not know he worked on this book. But Kevin and Steve, you may remember Citizen V and the V Battalion, the Everlasting Number 2. And I was thinking, did he work on this book? Like, but I had to get him. I had to put that one in. First of all, no one else was going to get this thing. So I have a Scott Kobler signed Citizen V and the V Battalion, the Everlasting, classic series. One of Kevin's favorites.
Did you talk to him about that and say it was one of your favorite classic series? you said, I've covered this whole series before?
No, I was just chatting about his upcoming work and saying I liked the stuff and that. But it was just, I saw Citizen V in the V Battalion, and I'm like, because I also didn't want to say, like, how did you work on this thing? Because he is definitely not credited. I mean, what's wonderful about Scott, and I like a lot of things, but I feel he's one of those great artists that can look like other people if you need him to.
For sure.
So I'm sure he's on a lot of people's speed dial if they need to finish a book or they need help on something. But it was funny book. In all seriousness, I think we all didn't really like that limited series. And
I mean,
I don't think anyone's putting that on their resume for their highlight
reel.
The
first one was all right. But it started diminishing returns.
Yeah. But anyways, I saw that book in the short box and I'm like, oh, I have to bring this one. Kevin is now going to be jealous. He'll have to get Scott to sign his copy of it.
Wow.
But now for my book, for real.
Uh-oh.
You know I had to get it, boys. When I see the Beyonder on the cover of a comic book featuring the Avengers. Yeah. I had to go get Avengers Beyond number 1, Derek Landy, Greg Land, Jay Leiston. Leiston? Jay. Frank DiArmata. And this is spinning out of Balls Out Avengers.
Right.
They need to find out what's happening. And it's the Beyonder. I don't know how much of this crap I should spoil or not. So, Beyonder's back, guys. We knew that. But this is the big Beyonder based event. And event? I'm gonna isn't it always an event when the Beyonder comes back? Now, the problem with the Beyonder, and there are many, is it was Jim Shooter. I always feel like we'll always have a foot in the Silver Age, because I feel like the Beyonder is a very Silver Age villain, like massively overpowered with some goofy weakness you can trick him into. Like Mr. Mixitplick or whatever you say his name. Like, that's the problem with these superpowered guys. You need to give them some kryptonite or whatever you're going to give them. And so the Beyonder doesn't really work. He's a bit of a story breaker, I feel like, unless you go meta. And they don't go meta here. What they do is they have an even more powerful Beyonder, which is my least favorite way to do it, is to then put another character beyond that character that's more powerful. We get into this loop of like, then there's going to be a guy behind that.
Yeah.
Guy.
Well, it works with God, abstracts, right? That it's like, oh, you're not actually the all powerful. There's one above, and eventually it gets to something that's not named, right? Cause it keeps something a mystery there. But for these types of Mixitplick characters, it sometimes does work to have like that, like when it's how about like Q for Star Trek Next Generation? Like, it worked that there was a council of Qs that had guidelines of how they're supposed to operate. So if he steps outside those boundaries, like the council could come after him, right? Like that. I think that worked for that character. And I know they've done a little of that with the Beyonder in the past, that like there's the rest of the Beyonders and he was a baby Beyonder, and they had to, you know, bring him back and now, spank him and all that sort of garbage.
Now there's a character, there's one beyond even those other Beyonders. They just keep adding And that's what made me laugh, was like, you just, that's one way to have these stories, is just keep escalating the power. But at that point, you're like, what? It's meaningless. Like, he already was this omnipotent being, and then you have the next level, and now we have a level past that. That being said, like, the Beyonder's big, dumb, fun. He's a kid with super, you know, he's Impy the Impossible Man or any one of these other ones, just to the nth degree. And I would have preferred a more subtle approach. And I just don't know, in 20 years when they bring him back, are they going to have yet another character behind that throne? And just, I don't know. I had fun with it, but I generally feel like it's pretty silly to keep putting yet another more powerful character in the back. Maybe a smarter character. Like, there are other ways you can get around that. And this also has your problem of the technology is magic. There's a gimmick that Iron Man and Black Panther work that seems very, very suspect in general. Like, just, it's a book of turn your brain off and just have big, dumb superhero fun.
Well, that's, but what, it's that's just what the hard. First one was like, too, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I just think they could have maybe worked the Beyonder without necessarily going that route of like, oh, behind that curtain, there's an even more.
Sure.
Burn Notice was a TV show I loved from about 20 years ago, but they ran into the same problem every year. There was a conspiracy behind the one they just solved, and at some point you were just like, it's kind of like Marvel Cinematic Universe. How many secret societies are there out there running around?
The Clone Saga.
But yeah, if you like, you know,
it never ends.
Dumb superhero fun, this is it. And it's, like I said, connected to Balls Out Avengers, so if you're enjoying that, you're probably going to want to see this. But this gives you all the setup of what's going to come, this new big bad, how the Beyonder works, how his bosses work, and all that sort of business. But I don't know that you necessarily need it. It might be more fun to go in without the backstory.
As long as there's not a big bureaucracy behind it all.
Yeah, it might be. But he's got that, you know, the silver armor from Secret Wars 2 with the big shoulder bits and all that. Maybe Jim Shooter's legacy is continuing.
This isn't my night. Keep touching upon all the stories that I... I'm not into Secret Wars 2 now. You're killing me.
What about Avengers Infinity? That's what I immediately thought of when Andrew was talking about the guy behind the guy.
Speaking of Avengers.
People were like, there's a giant hand coming out from outer space and he's holding eternity. Or what's it, the Living Tribunal? I don't know. Either one. And then people are like, how come there's a guy behind the guy?
Yeah, and then the last panel is like the artist's hand and the thing drawing it. Yeah.
I mean, the worst is Spider-Man 3, though, where, like, it's not the burglar that's shooting. It's like the guy, the Sandman has to be behind the guy that's shooting. And then the next movie, there'll be a guy behind the guy.
Yes, exactly.
There'll be this whole line of people that actually shot Uncle Ben.
Joe Chill is really the Joker.
Ben never stood a chance. He actually dodged the first three bullets. And it was, like, the fifth guy in line that got him.
Well, that's because they sent the... you know, Sinister Six after Uncle Ben.
There needs to be a, like, a Naked Gun airplane type superhero movie that could play upon all these tropes and do that kind of stuff, you know? Anyway.
For sure, for sure. And you need the guy that's has the exact same powers as the hero, but he's the evil version.
Kevin, sorry I keep turning to Kevin for some of these things, but they're books that I know that he's followed. Are you along in the Avengers Assemble and the end of the Avengers here?
I'm not 100% up to date, but I know who Avengers Prime is.
Well, again, I'm
and it turned out it wasn't our guest, so
yeah, I'm not gonna spoil any deets, but at the time of this recording, there's still one chapter to come. And Well, first of all, I should say what this is. This Avengers Assemble event is a 10-part epic. It's covered in four issues of Avengers, issues 63 to 66, with art by Javier Garon. Four issues of Avengers Forever, issues 12 to 15, with art by Aaron Cooter. Plus an Alpha and an Omega issue, with art by Brian Hitch on the Alpha issue, and the Omega issue has yet to hit. And this has been billed as, you know, the big confrontation with the ultimate Masters of Evil, right? It's been a battle years in the making. They've crossed paths and, like, scuffled a little bit, but, like, you know,
with 666 Mephistos?
Well, that's the part of the issue here, is they, in this series, they're moving the goalposts more than once, too. It's I mean, the Masters of Evil seem like such a big threat, yet, again, I'm not spoiling any details, but they handle the Masters of Evil with relative ease, like, in the first few issues, and that's... they're like, no. The real deal is like a giant monolithic version of a bad guy who we've seen before. But then, you know, they're like handling that pretty well. And but no. Behind that, actually, the real thing is there's a big, you know, like natural disaster scale type event. But because it's on a far distant planetoid in the far reaches of space, that would hardly be the way to advertise a big Avengers story. So instead we've got this, like, 2-year buildup that it's going to be this battle for the ages. And the Avengers handle these guys pretty... like, even Captain America can stand up against the Ultimate Doom guy? Like, hasn't he killed thousands of... I mean, it was just really weird. But listen, the art is good, and the whole story feels like it's going somewhere, and I guess because it keeps changing, it keeps rolling, but I really felt like the goal, like, there wasn't enough to make this be what it is, and they had to keep changing it and have it be something different, or no, or it's kind of like you guys were saying with the other, there's something behind that, no, it's something behind that. There is a really fun Deathlok moment that I think pays off for the use of the character, both here and in the Avengers Forever title. And the other piece is that kind of bothers me a little bit. I mean, maybe it's still coming, but I finally have come around to liking this new Ghost Rider. The all rider, you know, and I'm was certainly curious about the role of this whole all rider and how he was going to play into the way this thing ended. But he's really de-emphasized in this whole, again, so far, there's one issue to go, but so far in this whole big finale event, I mean, there's even an issue with him, maybe it's the 8th or 9th issue, where we catch up with him and he's even, like, sitting around talking about how, oh man, too bad he can't be there for the battle, like, he's not there, which I guess I'm watching from a distance. And it's like, but I thought he was gonna be, you know, like, the key to victory and everything beyond just gathering up a bunch of Avengers, which was cool, granted, like, getting, like, the god of punches or whatever he was, the god of fists and all that. I mean, that was fun. This whole thing was good, but it just could have been better. I'm not sure it's hitting the notes that it needs to hit, that it's like, okay, this part of the story was going somewhere, so it has to have, you know, it has to be like a fulcrum or really matter towards the end. I mean, Starlin's a guy who, yeah, he builds up these things, but then they fit in at the end. Oh, that's what he was going to use that for. That's where he was going with that. Here it feels like there was a lot of buildup happening and things didn't necessarily pay off, yet the story is still being told. There's still advancement of everything. It's not like we're just, like, standing around, looking around, wondering what's going on. But there's just, you just forget about stuff. Like, oh, yeah, like, how come, what about all the Ghost Rider stuff? What about this? What about that? But, hey, there's still still an issue to go.
Yeah, in the Omega, he'll get off the couch, like Century, and then he'll just go and do his thing.
Yep, that he was always meant to do.
Yeah.
And he'll finally make sense.
This is the best use of that Ghost Rider since pretty much the beginning of the run, because I remember when he was riding that Celestial, because he rides things. I was like, wow, that's crazy. And then I remember he was driving his car from one continent to the other. It goes underwater and he's not even awake. Or then he was hanging out with Odin drinking and all that stuff. I'm like, so many funny good things.
Yeah, that Avengers Assemble series was very enjoyable. And, it made him a hero. It showed him making sacrifices and gave him a role and explained him beyond the Spirit of Vengeance type Ghost Rider that we're used to, which was much needed.
All right. Can we get rid of this Alpha Omega business? I think I'd rather have the Point issues come back.
Oh, not the Point issues. No.
Well, it's instead of having a whole separate miniseries, though, if you still want to have the event in the regular books, to have a bookend so that there's an actual title called, Judgment Day, or an actual title called Avengers Assemble. I kind of get it.
You don't need to tell me, Steve. I went on the Unlimited and read Spider-Man Maximum Clonage Alpha.
Yeah, there you go. For sure.
He tried to get me to read that.
Welcome back, Marvel listeners. It's that time again. What time is it? It's time for our continuing the 21st segment and our ongoing coverage of Marvel's New Warriors comic. Longtime listeners know, Kevin, Steve, and I have been starting very way, way back with Thor 411, 412, and New Warriors number 1, talking about the birth of this exciting team. And now we're deep into it. We're well into 1995. Gosh, 1995, so long ago.
But our last that Justice series and Night Thrasher, though.
Yes. Our last episode, we did a coverage of the related Nova series, all 17 issues, and grabbed New Warriors number 60. I've been put, as I mentioned in the previous episode of that, there is a Omnibus Volume 2 coming out.
Three.
Trying to get this... our segments done so we can have these when some of these roll out. Personally, one of the things that started this was I had the first Omnibus and Kevin said he liked New Warriors and I was bought it because I was out of comics for a big chunk of time in the 90s, especially this time. So it's just funny that that's how it got us started. But now we're into the New Warriors Endgame. We're heading down to the end, and as listeners probably know, at the end of 1996, Marvel's going to file bankruptcy. And that's going to derail a bunch of things. That's probably my biggest what if for all the kind of real world what ifs is like, what if they never filed bankruptcy? What if a different ownership group? You know, that it seems like such a turning point. I mean, there's tons of them. You know, you can pick your own. But for me, especially because I wasn't reading comics at the time, I always think about all this because I like to go back and cover this 90s stuff. So it's fascinating. Like, what happened? Like, were you reading in end of 96, into 97, Kevin?
I was. I mean, people have many different opinions about that time period. So you're saying if Marvel didn't if there wasn't that whole junk bonds thing, if there wasn't those fights between tycoons and everything. I mean, they still gave away their movie rights. I don't think that would have really changed. I mean, they probably would have still made some movies.
I don't. What I'm curious about is they obviously had to kind of rework the entire line.
Yeah.
You know, they were putting out a ton of comics, and I believe that's going to drop down pretty significantly. You know, around the bankruptcy and just after. And then now it's clearly back up to where it was. But I just think about everything, like, would things like New Warriors have gone on? Would 2099? There were just all these things that ended, and maybe they would have ended anyways. Yeah. But I think if the company was still around, would they have just pushed those series? Maybe, I mean, eventually they'll peter out, but maybe there would have been 100 issues in New Warriors, or maybe 2099 would have kept going for another few. I don't know.
See, I say, yeah, the bankruptcy, but you got to remember that 93 is, like, pretty much the height of the speculative boom. So regardless if Marvel's going bankrupt or not, the bottom has fallen out of the industry.
That's true, but Marvel seems to, especially in recent times, like, no matter what, they just put out a lot of comic books. Like, that's their strategy, is to really crowd the shelves, I feel like. Especially when you compare recently to their big rival DC. Like, not that DC isn't putting out a lot of books, but I feel they've cut their number of titles down, where Marvel likes to keep a lot of books. I mean, a lot of them are short limited series or whatever, but they almost always have a ton of product on the shelf week in, week out. And that's what I'm kind of, they got to fill it with something, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. I was always just fascinated, like, would all of those kind of weird things they were doing in the 90s have continued? I mean, maybe they'd be continuing straight, or maybe they would have just died at a different time.
Yeah.
I just feel like so much of that stuff died at the end of 96 and 97 that I attribute it to the bankruptcy. Yeah. I don't know. I just, it's impossible to tell, but that to me would be the most fascinating. What if they could have made it? Would they have kept pushing out a bunch of stuff? Maybe they would have kept up with the Malibu stuff. I don't know.
See, you forget about one crossovers. Other thing. I remember 97, 98, being, since the Heroes Reborn thing happened. And what was that? Was that 96? 97?
I think that's going to be 97. I think that was after the bankruptcy.
So you have all that stuff going on. And then they launch a bunch of new books. They're like, oh, since, because it actually, Thunderbolts are in this, that unique brief period of time where, like, the main heroes aren't on Earth. So if you want to launch some books, there's, like, room in New York City and everything. So they have a bunch of books there, too. Like, they have a Quicksilver, they have Heroes for Hire. You know, there's some different stuff, things. And then those books go on beyond a year, like, 18 issues. And then, like, the accounting department's like, oh, well, we changed how we're looking at it, the numbers. And all these books that seem to be successful are no longer successful. And those are all gone, too.
Yeah, it's a crazy, crazy time. Well, and like I said, I'm sure some of this is just me fascinated with the 90s because I wasn't reading and going back and trying to crack the code. Because I feel like comics were, I mean, they're always stylized, but some of these 90s books have a very strong feel to them that's hard for me to sometimes even understand, much less get into. But I'm sure if I was buying them at the time, I'd be fired up and excited at the types of storytelling techniques they use and everything. Wow. The kind of extreme sort of pushing everything to the edges and making the action scenes very disorienting to old people like me.
I think it's a matter of perspective, because if we were a YouTube video, I would totally have a video where it's like, I cracked the code. Comics are good forever or terrible forever or something. Because people, like, if it depends what you're looking at, right? Like, I was always like if they put out 100 books and I'm buying 10 books and I like those 10 books and those are good books, like, my perception of Marvel, Marvel's doing good. I'm reading everything. I'm enjoying all the, because I'm not going to be able to buy 100 books anyways.
No.
But if you're not reading and you're just looking at like the main line, oh, the X-Men or Avengers or whatever is terrible. So then you're applying like your small range of books, you're applying to the whole company's output and saying they're terrible. But I'm like, it's not hard to find 10% of a company's line. Just skim off the cream and just read that. You're always having a good time.
True. The problem comes is if you're a fan of particular characters.
Yeah.
And you feel, you know, say you're a Daredevil guy, for example. Just picking that at random, Kevin. No reason.
I mean, that's a terrible example.
You'd have, and you feel like you want to read him all the time. Well, you might end up in eras where it's just not, you know.
Doesn't you're really not, happen.
Yeah, it's not happening for you. I mean, maybe it's happening
I'm just
for
saying
people.
With Daredevil, doesn't really happen. I mean, if you're trying to read Spider-Man during the 90s, and I did. You're reading through lots of years of Clone Saga, which is a nice segue, as I would say.
Yes, we should get back. Let's get so it's where's our and as is our tradition. Here we are. Where'd we leave off? We're starting New Warriors 61. What's our lineup? What's going on, Kevin?
All right. Well, if you remember, all they wanted to do was change the world. But now they've updated their thing of young heroes with courage to change the world and the power to back it up. Do you like that new slogan better?
No, I think shorter is better. Justice like lightning, you know, like little catchphrases. I don't need an essay.
So our lineup currently, I mean, I was conflicted. I was like, is Andrew going to ask me for both lineups? Because I only have the one lineup for you. I made an editorial decision.
Well, look, all this stuff is line drawing. We cover some tie-ins. We don't cover, like, we're not going to do a cover every possible appearance of every character and everything. That I think would lose momentum. And we'd kind of get distracted from the core New Warriors. So just give us our core main team. I don't care what Dwayne is doing.
Speedball, Robbie, bouncing bundle of energy, and a cat. A Firestar, Angelica, mutant master of microwaves. Not that kind. A Turbo, Mickey, the human torpedo. That song going through my head now.
What about, so you're not counting the other, her brother that wears the suit either? He just...
No, he like tries it out on weekends. Justice, Vance, TK Fury, Scarlet Spider, Ben, Web-Slinging Wonder, and the clone. Ah!
Well, we're going to... isn't he the real one, Kevin? I'm having trouble keeping it straight.
I'm not sure at this point, but at some point, yes, he is. He thinks he's the real one. But I think he still thinks he's the fake one and is the fake one at this point. Powerhouse, Alex Power, the modular superhero when he steals those extra powers from his siblings. And I don't know if I should really include Rena Time Slip, but I mean,
yes, time.
She's there.
I mean, you can skip.
I don't think they really explained her powers.
No,
she doesn't really fight yet. She's just drifting back and forth through time.
I thought you were going to debate including Hindsight or not.
Oh, maybe.
I guess that's a no. Well, anyway, so our and right now, sort of the ongoing, aside from their inner angst, probably the biggest outstanding issue is Nita has been captured, and they're
that's
trying
the
to find her.
Outstanding issue.
I feel like that's the one that's character driven to the biggest point. I mean, obviously they've turfed out the founder. Dwayne Night Thrasher got kicked out.
And Rage.
He went off and has his own... Rage joined him, has his own team. And he's like, I'm going to take over, one of the old enemies. We're going to see them later. But went off...
Is it Psionics?
Yeah, I don't know how you say all those P's and S's and I's and all that stuff.
This is the thing. If you never say them out loud, how do we know what you're supposed to be saying?
But he's still on friendly terms somewhat because he's funding them to some degree. Plus, we've stabilized the creative team for the most part. We might, I don't know if the fill-ins happen now or later when we get to the issues, we'll say, but it's Evan Skolnick's taking over writing, and it's Patrick Zercher generally on art with Peepoy often, but I think we might see some different anchors, but they might come in when the next, you know, we're covering a range, but I think it's all Zercher and Peepoy on this range, which I like. It's a good team.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying them, but 61 starts us off. As I think Steve mentioned, New Warriors is getting folded into the Spider-Man family as Marvel's grouping all the different titles. So yeah, as Kevin noted, with Scarlet Spider coming in, we're going to get crossed into the Spider family, which means Clone Wars saga thing. I'm not super familiar with this stuff. I know, Kevin, you said you were reading it.
Oh, yeah.
I tried a little bit, but what I didn't realize, and I'm sure this makes me sound dumb, is the Clone Saga is a lot of comic books, like not regular event. It's because I'd read a trade or two, and no, Andy, it's a ton of comics.
Yeah. It basically runs like through all the titles, like part 1, 2, 3, 4, like every month, sort of like the Superman books in the Triangle era.
Yes.
But there's all this extra material. Like sometimes a New Warriors is there. There's like one shots. There's a lot.
Yeah. So we're going to, again, with our line choice, keep it very limited in our personal coverage of all this stuff. So don't worry, people. If you're in the dark like me, it'll be fun to follow. And if you're not, well, you're an expert like Kevin and can just laugh at my goofs. These have been on the unlimited. So we were reading floppies. Well, I'm sure once the omnibuses come out, they'll put it all on the unlimited. But it's nice. I didn't have to buy these. I mean, the last few issues, which we'll cover in a later segment, I did have to buy. But these you can read on the unlimited right now without having to wait. But yeah, I think Kevin has some of the floppies, though.
You know what was weird is I found out I didn't have issue 63.
Oh, but that's the most important one, Kevin. Because I pretend like these make a big difference between one or the other.
And then I looked at that cover, read that issue, and I'm like, I don't remember this. So it's like...
Well, read it. So.
I know. I don't remember these a lot anyways, but there's certain moments or things that I definitely remember that stick out in my brain. It's not like I was reading these over and over, but it's so funny when you say, oh yeah, I have that whole run. I read that whole book. And I'm like, apparently I was lying and forgot that whole time. It's like, what happened back then? You missed an issue. I wasn't going to cons. Like where else was I getting issues from? Like, you miss an issue, you miss an issue. Like, I don't know. Maybe I didn't even notice back then I had missed an issue.
Well, the stuff does lurch around a little. I wouldn't blame you.
I mean, there's a chance I might have stuck it in with my Spider-Man books, but probably not.
But anyways, this starts out with the cover is the team. It looks almost like a video game, like Firestar is using her power like the torch in a dark tunnel. And above them, a sort of in-shadow spider character is menacing above them.
Yeah, I don't think that's a clone.
But it opens with a dark-suited Spider-Man who we can't see in shadow.
That's
and
so weird.
Robbing Gene Tech. But, I mean, I could, you know, the webs look definitely Spider-Man. The eyes. And then on page 3, he steals this terrible he steals Chemical X. Can I call it that, Kevin? Are you going to mind if I...
Sure. I might have to get a new copy of this issue, too, because, I mean, it displays fine, but it's like one of those things where you run your hands over it, and it's all bumpy. It's like it was exposed to water, or...
Oh, yeah. I have plenty of those.
That's one of those things when you're digging through, like, the dollar bins or whatever, and it's, like, in a bag. Like, it sometimes, like, you just sort of, like, if you can, like, run your hand over the bag just to make sure, because I put one of those issues back recently when I was at a con, because I was like, oh, that has that weird bubbly feeling. I'm like, it looks fine, but I'm like, I'm just not going to be happy with that.
So my problem is they do this great reveal on the third page of this spider guy in red and blue, but I have no idea who he is.
So. Spider side.
It's kind of wasted. I will learn who he is, but right now I'm like, that didn't mean anything to me. And then it goes to Justice acting like a real jerk while their headquarters are being repaired. Like, he admits they don't have insurance, and he kind of threatens the guy. And I'm like, what is wrong with these people?
I don't know.
They're terrible.
They are.
In hindsight, Lad and Nova, who has been depowered, are getting into fights, and it looks like they're being spied on by some mysterious figures who I'm sure we'll learn about later.
I can't believe it's still this long. They're like, hey, you have hidden tunnels in your headquarters. And my brain is like, do they ever get around to going there? Like, I don't remember.
We're going to find Ogre. And I'm right, Kevin.
That's true. Yeah. And Huma Sapien.
But just to talk to how I appreciate, and Firestar in her civilian uniform takes her friend to work at the mall, and there is just, it's a place, McBurger, and they just put signs up, and Peepoy and Zercher are just really earning their paycheck. There is so much detail. You could spend a lot of time reading all the different signs, and everybody's t-shirt has logos, and I don't know, I'm used to a certain era where there were no background, you know, a pink background in the character, and that's it. And this thing is like massively, I was just really impressed. And I feel like you can spend a lot of time. There's another scene where Robbie's powers, Speedball, are going out of control. And there's a great scene where he's with his mom, and it's just everywhere, and the little balls, and you can see all the things he's destroying in the apartment. Plus, so they have these kind of background pieces with all this detail, then, like, on the next page, they'll drop a 12-panel grid.
Love it.
Onto a page that has these detailed buildings in the back. Like, that's... how are you not getting your money? I want anybody to tell me that they have some kind of problem with this thing. Because, at least from that perspective. Because I was super impressed with all this. I don't know about you, Kevin. But, like, all these insert panels, big pieces, dynamic page design. I was never confused about what's going on, and so much detail.
I guess someone nowadays would be like, oh, it's overstuffed with content. And I'm like, no, it's how a comic is supposed to be.
It's great. We then cut to Turbo and her dorm room, like her Strange Tales shirt. She's got pennants on the wall. You can read, you can it's just everything. And again, the conflict with her and her brother, she's much better at the suit. It responds to her better. And basically the upshot of his Gene Tech, even though they're the bad guys, call in the new warriors to say, hey, this terrible chemical got stolen. The nano contagium, chemical X or whatever I'm calling it. Can you go do it? And they're like, we'll get this thing back from this superpowered villain that robbed you. But, and this is a big but, if we're not back in an hour, you have to call the authorities. Like, we're not hiding from you. And we're not hiding the job from.
Like, to put the names on the shirts and everything?
That could be.
Like, do you remember in Thunderbolts, like, they would do a flashback, and then someone would be wearing, like, an NWO t-shirt or some kind of thing like that.
And not just that, they're not dropping these in with digital files or these are like drawn in, but there are just some scenes where any background when they're closing in on Spider Side and his spider sense tingles, like there are five or six buildings in the background with cars on the street, pedestrians on the sidewalk. Like, and these pedestrians, they're like 2 centimeters tall maybe or something. It feels like a lot. And this, like I said, mid-90s, it's great. So basically he retreats to a building that's a lab and sets a trap for them. So when they break in, they get attacked by various weirdo clone creatures, which yeah. I'm sure these don't have names, right? They're just generic.
I think they're Warren. Just generic failed experiments. You know what's really terrible is that new Warriors badge, the yellow and the red. Like, when Turbo changes the costume to black, now there's just, like, blotch of yellow there. Like, it never seems to... It never works with anyone's costume.
No, it does not. It stands out. I mean, you can tell, again, the attention to detail. They put it on everybody.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I think it looks... It's always jumping out. And I guess they wanted, like, hey, this is how they're talking and communicating. But I find it more of a distraction visually as well. Loads of graffiti on this building. Yeah, just fun. And the action sequence, there's a double page spread with kind of slightly angled horizontal strips of panel showing the different characters fighting.
But did you ever go to a Hardee's? Because I want to know how these X-Men figures were.
I have been to a Hardee's. They did not have X-Men figures, okay, to my understanding at the time.
But who's the other guy? Okay, Avalanche, Blob, Mask? And I don't know who this other guy is. Like, it's like Commando or something? I don't even... Like, this is getting really obscure. It's like they might as well just give an, I don't know, Slayback a figure or something.
Time to go to eBay, Kevin.
Apparently.
So, they were given a tracker by Gene Tech, which Spider-Side destroys, ambushes them, and then escapes. And Justice had tried to line up the team to foil this by having them go and cover this exit, and all, but it fails. And then once the attack is over, all the generic bad guys just kind of rot away.
Yeah.
Like a gross sludge.
Yeah, that's pretty much how the clones sort of... degrade.
And then, technically speaking, if you want, I'm mixed on telling people to do this, but on the Unlimited, Spider-Man Maximum Clonage Alpha number one is the next book, and it has maybe 10 or 15 pages that relate to this incident. And what I thought was particularly interesting is sometimes I read them on the computer, sometimes on the tablet. They're both equally crappy. But what I thought was interesting about the tablet is the search function, I feel like, is a lot easier.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the app is definitely different.
So it's a weird, I don't know why. But basically, this is, I'm going to omit some of the Spider-Man, Ben Reilly, Peter Parker. But basically, they take the stolen stuff, make his virus, and it kills an entire town of 2,600 people. Over 20. Can I also say, I don't really like that Marvel went for these kind of heavy body count storylines with thousands of people dying. It just, I don't know. It's not, I don't really like that in the main Marvel universe. It feels like it's a weird, I don't know. It's my own thing. I just don't. It's fine if they want to kill planets full of broccoli people or whatever, but it just feels tonally weird.
It is. Kevin, your thoughts? Yeah, it gets a little weird, but I feel like that's like a Hulk story beat where it's like the leader will be testing some new gamma bomb or something, and some town of people, of course, will come back as some kind of creature or monster or whatever.
Yeah, so Miles Warren, the Jackal, he's got one of his spider clones. And the whole point is the virus kills everyone who's not a clone. So it kills everyone except for one person. And that one person is going to be, I guess, this happens off panel. The two books are vaguely connected, but not really. It's kind of annoying. Like, the storylines interlap, but I feel like there should be a third story that... There's a gap between where this ends and New Warriors 62. But the point you want to see, and it's also interesting if you want to see a different art team tackle them. But basically, the few pages are New Warriors go back to Gene Tech and say, hey, you didn't tell us this was like some kind of crazy killer bomb for everybody thing. He's like, yeah, I know. So that puts them to go after you know, they need to figure out what's going on with this town that everyone died in. Plus, you get Spider-Side's name in this.
What a name.
And you also have Scarlet Spider was sent a postcard from the Jackal about this town. He goes down, and he finds the one survivor who now is like a super adaptoid. But because it's a Marvel comic, the New Warriors attack Scarlet Spider because, remember, they just fought a Spider-Man type clone. But Spider-Man wipes the floor with them. I mean, I know it's Ben Reilly, but he has the memories of Spider-Man, as well he should. But at that point, he leads them to Spider-Side fighting this guy. Spider-Side throws Helix, or the Survivor, or whatever. He's not named Helix here, but he is in the next issue. Weird. Like I said, I don't really get that. But he's always adapting. So when he throws him up in the air, he grows wings. And the New Warriors are able to easily take him out, which is strange. And Spider-Side and Scarlet Spider fight. And then Spider-Side gives his name and runs away. And that's where it ends. And so you're like, if you had stopped here, you would think that that survivor had been subdued with his superpowers. He's unnamed, and it's fine. And, you know, you met Spider-Side and he disappeared. But when we cut to 62, which is the next one, a beautiful cover, you know, the team in fighting pose with Scarlet Spider all approaching with the appropriate... Robbie's smiling and the other characters are grimacing. They're fighting this guy. He's called Helix. I assume he's the last one because in footnotes they say, you know, fought in the last issue. And I'm like, but he didn't have a name. He's now no longer subdued. Like, it just, there was a gap between Alpha and this thing.
Yeah. That's where the, like, the Jackal's agents, like, get him out of jail and out of the custody and everything. You know, you forgot to tell everyone that you tried to trick me into reading the Spider-Man Maximum Clonage Alpha. And I was like, no, sir.
Well, I was honest and said, if you want to, I don't really know the Clone Wars. You're the expert. But anyways, I don't think you need to read the Alpha for those bits. It just gives you a little bit of the backstory. But it's mostly covered here. The rest of the Alpha is about Spider-Man and Jackal and Ben Reilly and all that stuff, which we don't really need here, except to know that Scarlet Spider was put on a path to intersect with the New Warriors. So they're fighting this dude. And somehow, also, Scarlet Spider has an antidote to whatever's bothered. So maybe this guy isn't the same, even though they said they met him in that one. But... he has an antidote. I don't know where he got what issue that came in. Not in this, not in Alpha, I can tell
Andrew,
you.
I think you need to read more issues of the Clone Saga to figure out where this came from and report back.
But they don't, there's tension. I always do like how Marvel made sure that new teams always have trouble coordinating attacks and everything. And everybody's, you know, getting in each other's way and all that. But it does lead to... okay, I'm not a fan of the 90s design where the big guys are just ridiculously big, but when spikes. Helix explodes in spikes and punches Speedball.
Who wore the spikes better, the guy from Undertow or this guy?
I think this guy's more fun because he's always changing, morphing. It makes it more interesting. But yeah, just a lot of crazy... because we do see the Undertow guy, because again, they had kidnapped Needon or trying to brainwash her with General Obsidian. And so that plot goes on. And
boy,
it's
there's
not
a lot of food ads in here.
Yes.
It's like another food ad with another like comic thing you can get from the food ad. And I'm sure the name of this food doesn't exist anymore. Or I don't even know if they still make them, but I don't know. Those cards look kind of all right.
Well, I have, like I said, eBay has been awfully tempting. But this is basically like half the issue is the punch up and the rest are moving some of the plot forward. Slipstream in her civilian, but she's not time slip yet. Sorry.
Slipstream.
But she's Slipstream time, whatever her name. She's trying to contact Robbie and or Hindsight Lad. to tell them about her vision that Robbie's going to die. And also we saw in 59, that was a cool foreshadowing where they have the panel where we saw Scarlet Spider had joined the team and everything. I mean, I guess it was a spoiler, but I thought it was cool. Kevin, your thought, did it bother you? Was it a spoiler or did you think it was cool?
No, like they're trying to play into the character's powers and everything. So, I mean, I think it works out well.
So the entire issue is basically just the big punch up. In the end, they kidnap him and he's morphed back down and he is in their containment cell and they decide to ask Scarlet Spider to join the team.
Yeah, that's rather fast. There's also that one page of Nova in here. If you're a Nova fan, like he's not being serviced a whole lot anymore.
No, and he's angry and trying to get back with his girlfriend, and he wants his powers back, and I don't know. He's a little whiny to me.
Yeah, I would say so. And it's kind of funny that they get into the whole business of like storing possible criminals or threats in their basement. It just brings me back to the Flash TV series, CW, where they kept on like having all these people, and then you're like, do they have a toilet? Do they give them food? Like, it brings up all these other issues.
Well, this guy's a super adapter, so he doesn't need it.
Apparently not.
But this leads us to Kevin's missing issue 63, which has a TV monitor with three of our characters on it for the secret monitoring. And it shows us this Helix guy again adapting and morphing, and he has escaped. And he's fighting the New Warriors again. I mean, they're fun because of his power set and the art team. These are fun, but I had a whole issue of it last time, so I don't need... I mean, their smarts only give us a few pages, but Scarlet Spider, in a brusque manner, indicates that the best way is not to fight this guy because he adapts if he's threatened, but just to put him in kind of a passive force field thing where he can't... He doesn't... There's no threat. He kind of runs his power out, so to speak. You know what I mean? Like, he just kind of tires himself out. And this leads...
He falls down.
Yeah. And this leads... Again, they're trying to... There's some tension with the Scarlet Spider. Even though he's joined the team, he's not a team player. And a fun little homage where he looks at Firestar and sees Mary Jane.
Yeah. And Justice is always... Yeah, oh, Justice is always a little... Why am I calling him Justice all the time, though? I noticed in the notes it still said Marvel Boy, and I'm like, I gotta call him Justice from more often.
Like Lightning.
It's a little awkward. Yeah, he's always a little angry and everything. He's just like, I can't be as good of a team leader as Dwayne and everything. And then when someone else suggests something, he's just kind of like, oh, that guy's trying to steal control of the leadership away from me.
Yeah. A lot of them... I would say jerk is a fair description of a good number of the New War. That's an easy shorthand for they don't handle their business as well. It always seems like they could chill out a little bit. But meanwhile, we have Hindsight Lad has introduced Rena Patel with her vision of the future. And Robbie doesn't believe her. He thinks she's a groupie.
Yeah.
And I'm like, in a world with superpowers, wouldn't you believe, like, it's not the most insane thing predicting the future. But meanwhile, Angelica needs to get checked out by a doctor because she's concerned that her powers might have a bad effect on her. Whoa, foreshadowing, eh, Kevin?
Yeah, what did you think of this plot?
I thought it was pretty hokey.
At the time, I'm like, I guess I'm just like, oh yeah, microwave powers, she's pushing her. She's always been concerned about harming people with her powers, and then eventually they get to the plot where it seems like she actually could be harming people and she's harming herself. So it's more, I find it more frustrating rereading this now than when I originally read it. Because I know this doesn't go anywhere. I'm like, where can it go?
Yeah. It does seem like it's not a... I didn't care. And I didn't think it was... It's also done in like a ham-fisted kind of quick and dirty way, but she goes to a clinic to get checked out and meets Dr. Chen and confirms that it's all a doctor-patient confidentiality. And that page where she meets her, I have that original art page, Kevin.
What?
I got it, and it's one of those ones where a lot of the word balloons, I think, have all fallen off. So you get a baggie full of... I don't even know if I have all... Now that I'm looking, I'm like, I don't even know if I have all... I might have only have half these word balloons at this point. I mean, I don't really care about, like... I like seeing them, but it's not because I... You know, the word balloons weren't why I got it, but it was just funny that I got this. But I really like Zercher and Peepoy, and it was New Warriors, and because... They're not in costume.
I was going to say that's probably why the page was cheaper, right? Because they're not in costume.
Yeah, they're not in costume. It's only one of them. But I think it's a cool, you know, you get her talking to one of the other people who's also there and having problems. It just, like, you know, she's going to get it too. The second Angelica's talking to, like, that woman might as well said, I've got one more day till retirement. You know, like,
yeah.
And then lots of great detail. The doctor's desk is filled with all kinds of recognize, you know, like a lamp and pens and like a mouse, like all things you can see and that they took time to draw in, not just kind of rough shapes. But this leads to some kind of weird group who's going to kill everybody because they can read your genetics, and it's a real... I don't like this.
Have you seen the names of some of these characters?
I don't like any of this. I'll be honest with you.
I was just like, so is that supposed to be genocide?
Yeah.
I was like, oh boy.
And it's another one where they just show up and just start killing loads of people.
Yeah.
Which, as I said, it just that's fine in like a Punisher comic or something, but I just feel like. The mainstream superheroes' high body counts are not my jam.
Yeah, and I don't know if their motivation entirely... So there's going to be kickstarting human evolution by...
Killing everyone who has bad genetics.
And I'm like, I don't know if that's going to work. But it definitely reminded me of like something from a Star Trek where like you're introduced to the Romulans and they're like, oh, we kill blind people in our society and stuff like that, where they get, and then they don't have to waste their resources on people they find that are inferior.
Yeah. And I just, you can have that status, but they don't need to start out with them just killing a bunch of people in a medical clinic. Like it, and I get they, you know, it's extreme and super violent.
This is a 90s comic.
Yeah. By that part, so the super team attacks and is killing everybody, but they're fascinated by Firestar because, you know, she has good genetics. And as you can guess, like, they kill her friend with the bad genetics that she just met. Well, yeah, they shoot her.
Here we go, they got shot.
Yeah. And that would have been more, and in some ways, it's better to have that in a way, like a character we've met, than just them torching a couple of hundred random hospital people we don't know. You know what I mean?
Well, I feel like you have some, not attachment, but you know the character.
Yeah, and so we've met them to some degree. And it ends with Angelica in trouble, but who's here to rescue her? Why, it's the B team, I guess. It's Night Thrasher and Rage have teamed up with Psionics, I'm going to say, which were the enemies. That was pretty Persuasion, the mathematician, all those goofs who had fought the New Warriors.
Oh, I was going to dare you to name them all, but you already got half of them. Wasn't one of them Coronary?
Yeah, Coronary. And I don't remember the one that looks like Martin X, but or maybe that one is Coronary. Yeah, there's Pretty Persuasion, Math Magician. They're fairly generic, but that's going to lead to Marvel Classic in 64. Where when the New Warriors show up, they'll all be fighting each other. You know, that's a... Again, we saw that. You can't have it with that. You need them to... The groups always have to fight when they meet. And especially because the New Warriors think of most of Psionics as bad guys. So you have the three-way battle of all the different, you know.
So do you like Turbo and Blue or the Black better?
I guess I don't really care. I just want her to get rid of her communication triangle.
That's fair. And that's a full page jump splash in. When you open up 64. That's pretty nice.
And it's a big fight with, again, this three-way fight, mostly New Warriors and Psionics. But as we had seen, and people know, strange enough, Rage and Speedball had like a budding friendship and hung out a lot. So when they crash into each other, they're just good buddies, you know, and not going to fight each other. And and that was a funny moment for that. It was a nice twist on the Marvel good guys going to fight.
Do you like this You'll Get Rich ad?
I'm still on the Unlimited.
Shoes? Guarantee the Unlimited, you'll be as Kevin. You'll be as good.
No ads for me until we, not even next segment, I think. I think it'll be the finale before I'm, well, maybe next one. No, it is the next one. Oh, next segment, we're back to
Flop. I guess I got to continue bringing these ads to you. It says LA gear.
Be seeing those soon. But basically, it's a showdown with Dr. Chen. And that's where they're like, yeah, we just want to kill everybody. But Dwayne, who at one point really wasn't into using guns, is back to using guns.
That's the thing. It has he... Because he left the New Warriors and he had that whole blowout with them, now he's just like, well, I'm going to do whatever I have to do. And if that means killing people, I'm fine with it. I'm like, something must have happened in his own book, right? Like, that seems like we're missing. I don't know
the characters changed.
When he got to this point.
Yeah, when he's like, yeah, guns are cool. But obviously.
I mean, he had a gun in the back of his thing. But I don't know, he just seems...
That was like a last resort.
Yeah.
This one he reaches to pretty quickly. Like, he could have thrown a skateboard at her or something, you know?
Smoke bombs.
But obviously, the machine gun isn't doing real damage to the supervillain. But it does in the doctor pretty conveniently. And the villain with the genetic foresight is able to drop a hint that Night Thrasher maybe has some special genes in him.
Oh, didn't he
have
that?
This whole political, like, I don't know. The whole thing is just not my cup of tea, but it ends with her warning Firestar that, like, you know, she'll end up sterile.
Yeah.
Which is worse than cancer to her, and that just
ends
her entirely, which seems, first of all, that she trusts her. It seems weird, but...
Your power is you can see everyone's DNA and genes. I mean, I wouldn't want to have that power. Like, that's like a power equivalent to, like, if you can't turn it off and you can hear everyone's thoughts and you got to, like, separate that from your interactions. Like, not one of those powers you want to have.
No. But she's also pretty terrible. But we then cut to the inside of a newspaper. Man, this is... beautiful. Just they put blinds on all the windows, again, everything on the desk, they write out the newspaper. Like, it's really crazy.
And it's not the Daily Bugle. I thought they were introducing a new newspaper.
Yeah.
You know what's funny here? They have a fruit roll-ups ad, and it says enter the invent a villain contest. And I'm like, I wonder if people sent all their free ideas
exactly.
to them. And I'm like, did this villain actually show up anywhere? It's not like Charcoal and Thunderbolts. Like, that actually happened.
Or Humus Sapien.
Yes. But it's funny because do you remember that moment in the 90s when you had to blur your eyes or not stare at that picture? And you could see, like, there's some 3D thing, but if you looked off-center...
I always have trouble with those, I'll be honest.
They have one right in this issue.
Okay.
For the Fruit Loops ad.
Those
Fruit Roll-Ups.
Were not my... I had problems with them, I'll be honest. That's my own, you know, weakness, character flaw or whatever. I just was never good with those things.
And then the person that saw them was, it always seemed like they were the one that was on drugs. Yeah, look, I can see there's a building over here, and everyone's just looking at them like they're crazy. I can't see it.
Yeah, I couldn't. That was me. I could not see it. It sounds like you could see him though, Kevin.
Occasionally I would be able to see it, but it was, it's challenging. And I can't see this one. I tried. I don't know. I can't. It actually tells you to take it out of the comic to do it better and lay it flat. I'm like, that's not happening.
I'm not ruining my bumpy. Oh no, this isn't the bumpy one. I'm not ruining my good comic for your ridiculous business. I don't blame you.
It's funny. They say the competition is fierce. Fruit roll-ups and Marvel presents Spider-Man's five greatest villains. What villains do you think are on this page for the five Spider-Man's five greatest villains? And it's all, I'll give you a hint. They were all characters from the cartoon in the 90s, because that's how they're all drawn here.
Miles Warren, clearly. Nope. We're in the Clone Saga.
Nope.
Mobius.
Nope.
Kingpin.
You got one. Right?
Okay. The Rose, Hammerhead. Are they going level? Vulture, Hobgoblin?
No.
Dr. Octopus?
Yes.
The Prowler?
No.
Rocket Racer?
No.
I don't know. What are the other ones?
Rhino?
Rhino's good, yeah. I can't.
Venom?
Yeah. Is he even a bad guy?
At this point, he is. Scorpion?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you pick Scorpion or you pick Rhino, Scorpion, Venom all seem too much overlap.
That you don't even have the Green Goblin here boggles my mind.
I would say Doc Ock for me is superior to that. For me, it was always the villain, but
especially what do I know? In modern times, he's just grown in importance.
Well, he also delivered Spider-Man's first defeat was Doc Ock. So like he was a bad dude, and he, you know, the master planner led to the sequence where he has to, you know, lift up the machinery and all that. There's just a lot of key early moments, I feel, that were...
Yeah, the master planner thing, like one of the greatest Spider-Man moments of all time.
Yeah, so I'm a Spider-Head from way back. I like that Spider-Man. I think he's pretty cool. But here we are, ending the issue. Kevin, what's your takeaway? Are you...
You didn't reveal the
newspaper
secret
story. So they're doing stories on... These are in San Francisco. They're doing stories on Nova, and the reporter changing. They're like, this isn't working anymore. I don't get why you're so obsessed. The man's talking to the lady reporter, and she's like, no, I got to do some... this is an important story. We have to cover it. And he's like, this is silly. We got an admitted alien who's been charged by a cosmic authority to watch over us and the most active Super Frisco's ever been home to. And the little tongue goes out, and it looks like it's our dire wraith.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just guessing based on the art team. I think that's who we're meant to think.
Yeah.
And also because she shapeshifts and take over his identity.
You know what the thing is? Like, this shows a lot of long-term planning here. And I don't know if when I read these originally... Like, I don't know if this comes up again. Like, there might be issues until this actually concludes. But I don't know if I remembered this subplot when the actual... When it becomes the plot. Like, this is definitely... Like, how far did they think this book was good? I guess sales are good. Everything's still good. Like, the industry is not doing as well as it should be, but they're still like, long-term planning here.
Yeah, I with the having Rena foresee in issue 59 what's going to happen, you know, a good number of issues, not just three issues later, but, you know, five or six or whatever.
You know, I don't remember all of these things, and I don't know if they all happen. But that's a lot, yeah. Like, there's a lot here.
And then we also see what might also be important for the future, Kevin, so keep this issue in mind, is Alex Power gets his new character name.
Oh, yeah. Powerhouse.
So they're throwing names in Powerhouse. So he now is Powerhouse. I thought it was funny they put in Photon, and I'm like...
Yeah.
That name's already, well, maybe not. So he gets that. Plus we see, the introduction as Rena as a superhero time slip. and she has some way to manipulate time because she saved Hindsight Lad, but they're really vague. If she can, like, freeze it to move, because she steals all their badges in 3 seconds, and earlier she saved Hindsight Lad from a truck.
Yeah.
But I don't think they've explained it, other than her visions. So. Yeah, I don't get it.
And that intro page disappears, so they don't have to explain it either.
But they give her a real... You can tell a guy helped with that outfit, because she is very revealing. I'm like... Yeah, if she was worried about them creeping on her, maybe she wouldn't have had the whole... her whole midsection exposed.
Yeah.
Maybe she should tell those guys, I want a real outfit, not your creepy one.
But anyways, if she into the future, she saw herself with this outfit, so she knew she had to wear this outfit.
Yeah, but you get a few previews of Power Pack Ship Friday. You see Turbo fighting the existing Nova. You see Black Widow. Like, again, this whole foreshadowing and planning things in the future. Robbie still doesn't believe her, even though she shows she has powers. And I guess he's like, I'm immortal. I'm a important IP for a major character.
Yeah, he doesn't want to deal with that.
There's no way they're going to get rid of me. I'm worth money. Exactly. And we get to see the scene that we saw in 59, here in 64, so 5 issues later. She catches up with herself, where she sees Scarlet Spider and Alex Power and Hindsight Lad in his new outfit and all that. So I thought that was funny, but it kind of throws her a little bit.
You know, I have to laugh at some of these ads at the back of these issues, too, because they emphasize World Wide Web, and worldwide is one word. Yeah. And then, like, the web address is, like, in the smallest text. Like, they need to emphasize, they're emphasizing the wrong thing. And it's like, you go onto the internet. Too funny.
The internet? Who needs that? Well, the other thing I like is at the end, they did include this. They start putting the letters pages in, because they have a big announcement that you can email the New Warriors. And they're all AOL emails. And I still have an AOL. And the unofficial New Warriors internet discussion board.
Yeah.
Oh, Kevin, you should have been firing this one up.
I mean, I remember... Just because I was curious, I mean, I had the internet, but they made it seem like AOL was like a separate internet, and it sort of was. So I remember paying for like 1 hour before and checking out some, like, I guess they were sort of like Flash comics or something, and like some, I don't know, like forums and stuff like that. And then I was like, okay, I'm good. And then eventually, like, Marvel's just like, yeah, this internet is a big thing, so we can't just stay on AOL and have no presence on the actual internet.
But I like the whole, okay, go to AOL, keyword SF, I assume science fiction, choose television Star Trek comics, choose comics from Marvel, scroll down to the New Warriors. Like, now they're, you know, movies and all, but I love back then, it's like, okay, it's under sci-fi, television, Star Trek comics, comics from Marvel, then there's New Warriors. Like, that's a lot of... Yeah, but you could email at AOL, Tom Brevoort, Evan Skolnick.
I don't know if you knew about, like, comicboards.com.
I don't think so, no.
They're probably still around. I mean, last time I checked, they were. But yeah, there was definitely some poppin' forums with Marvel creators showing up there. Too.
And finally, Nita Chimera is back for our next issue, and they have her in some kind of crazy 90s spiked armor, but still revealing, you know, as much as you can with all the spikes around and her webbed hands.
You know what I remembered from this too is like that whole undertow thing. I remember ripping some of those things off.
Yeah.
I'm like, I saw some of the guys in here, and I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
But
they
basically,
gotta have the spikes.
Yeah, they've put the little computer in their brain. For those of you that don't remember, this shadowy organization Undertow are led by the spiky Doomsday ripoff guy and General Obsidian, who looks like a possible printing error. And what they do is they take these poor innocent people, give them bizarre superpowers that are hard to figure out, and put little control blocks in their head, and then they program them like kind of avatar warriors, so they don't have any choice in the matter.
I mean, who doesn't want a real tiny arm and a giant arm?
Yeah, and the characters are just weird. To me, they're nonsense, so I didn't follow up on them in the same way. Like, they have usually goofy pun names to the extent they have any names, and they're weird looking with gimmick power. Like, I know recently I geeked out and I really liked Skull Cat. Like, no, there's no Skull Cat here, okay?
Oh, just you wait. Well, we're gonna have... I should ask you about that when we get there, but we'll get there.
So, basically, everybody's, you know, hanging out, and finally they get the alert. You know, more character bits. Like, they suddenly get the alert that, hey, the computer has found evidence of this evil group in action. So, we can finally get, you know, maybe find out what's going on. You know, they get the undertow alert. You know, because Hindsight Lab set up all these cross-checks and database searches. And then it was also sparkled in with a vision from Time Slip. It shows Darkhawk's back with the group.
Oh.
And Dagger. I thought you'd like that.
Well, that's going to be good.
I'd like to see those come back. But anyways, they all have the character bits before they assemble the team. And Time Slip finally shows that her power is useful because she's like, why don't you take your spaceship? And they're like, what spaceship? And that's when Alex remembers, oh yeah, Friday, the talking spaceship from Power Pack. They can use that.
I had no idea what that was, what was happening there. But you know what? I distinctly remember that scene when it's coming out of the water.
Yeah.
That's imprinted on my memory. I was just like, what is happening?
I remember reading Power Pack when it first came out. So this was like, oh, that's right. Much like Alex, I had forgotten they had a spaceship. So it was nice. And it's a fun kind of, the design looks like it would be a great toy.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of, like I always thought like that was designed by someone who was into merchandising. Because that would have made a perfect toy for a little action figure type size. You know, it's got kind of a classic plane. It looks like a spaceship, but it's got a regular plane-ish design, so it's got wings and a cockpit and that sort of thing, and it's got big boxy units that you can lift up and put characters in and everything. Just like I said, a perfect toy. And that lets them get to the other side of the Earth in super speed. And it's some convoluted why
cocaine.
She volunteered for this mission was they're taking out drug dealers who are smuggling cocaine to get it on. I know the political stuff leaves me, but it's just so funny that like the army guys like General Obsidian and the people controlling the troops are all regular, but the bad guy is so cartoonishly oversized with spikes and
I love
weird
it.
Pointed teeth and yellow eyes. Like it's such a weird mishmash. So, the new Warriors.
I didn't remember him showing up so often as little bits in the issues in between.
So they crash the scene, and of course Nova, being a jerk, had to take over piloting the ship from Friday, and that creates problems. And then Needit plants a bomb because she's ordered to, but uses what's left of her resistance to push the Friday and everyone out before the bomb blows up.
I mean, if he didn't jam the ship in there, she wouldn't have needed to rescue him in the first place, but it's kind of sad.
Nova's gonna Nova. He's a goofy guy. But I like there's two little inset panels where you see it shoot up, and then a beautiful big explosion.
Yeah.
With, like, they're protected by Justice's TK field, and they're just little figures, and you can tell them by their silhouettes mostly. And then there's like a plane and the explosion. I don't know. I just thought it was a really cool looking page. And then it ends with Nita sending off and Rich can't do anything about it. Because, you know, she's got the control box in her brain. Kind of a sad, but a cool issue. But very, I'm glad they're bringing her back. I didn't want her, that storyline, to disappear forever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It seemed pretty important. She's a major part of the team. Let's get her back.
For sure. But I thought it was like 10 issues or something. Like, she's gone, but she keeps on showing up. So I'm like, yeah, that's good.
Yeah. I like the character. I want her, this to be resolved. I like that. And then 66 is a fun speedball focused issue where they homage the heck out of Ditko.
I was wondering, like, is this your favorite issue? Ditko
design. This one, I love when art teams do that. I know I've said that before, but there's something magic when they really make it look a lot more like you can still tell it's them, but they really lean into the Ditko-esque elements of the design. Plus, because the plot line involves Robbie going back to his hometown to hang out with his dad, the district attorney who doesn't like superheroes, but all his old villains were broken out of jail, and they all captured the cat that has speedball powers. So it's a lot of those Ditko design characters.
So these are all characters from that series, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, some of these guys are like due for, like, to break out again. Because I'm like, the Harlequin Hitman? The Leaping Logan?
Harlequin Hitman is basically The Question meets Mr. A. Like, it's so...
Or what was it? The Big Man?
Yeah, that too. Oh, there's another one, yeah. They're all that exact kind of... And then there's, like, a glue guy, and... There's all these... They're really Leaper, Logan, the Basher, Two-Legged Rat. Just fun, goofy Silver Age characters. And they capture the cat, and Robbie's able to clean their clocks pretty quickly. But this was all just a ruse, so he can get gassed by a character from his past who wants to get his superpowers and put them in him. Wants to steal, so he needed the cat and Robbie to take the speedball dimensional powers. But just a lot of classic sci-fi tech design, like the seat that the guy's in with the coils and the spikes and all, like, they're technology coils and stuff. Yeah, I really thought they have like the little dots up at top when they're doing it, and yeah, just everything is perfect for me. Kevin, what did you think of the homaging, or were you like, this is silly?
No, I think I enjoyed it at the time, and I still enjoyed it now, and I'm like, there's a cat in it.
Yeah, so they capture them, and Rob, and they're putting the ray on him, and Robbie's like, stop doing this to the cat, like, you're hurting him. And Clyde's like, oh, forget the cat. He just has a hairball. Mm-hmm. And the cat barfs out a bunch of the speedball dimensional bubbles. And it just blows everything up. And the cat escapes and attacks everybody. Like, Robbie gets away, opens a dimension to the kinetic dimension, and sees a shadow of himself. We've had that before. And the best is the resolution. Clyde just tells him to pull the plug on the machine. Yeah, this I thought was a fun, like, a really cool one and done, very fun, silly issue, and a big change. The cat was always running around all amped up, but now that they've been through this, the cat's calm and mellow and really nice with him. So it's just, I don't know, I thought it was fun, focused. There is a brief segment where Scarlet Spider and Justice are... Buddy having heads. Trouble getting along. Justice is like, I'm not a good leader. And then Sabra, who, you know, from the previous segment, the Israeli superhero, calls him. And he's like, oh no, do I have a romance with her? And they all want to know Scarlet Spider's identity, and he doesn't want to tell them the identity. Yeah, it's just a lot of that little bit back and forth to make you remember, oh, this is a New Warriors book. But it's mostly... Speedball, and I'm here for it. This was a great issue to end the sequence on. Really fun and silly. And no, sorry, folks. Thousands of people don't die in this one. And that's where we land. Yeah, that really was a great palate cleanser. As I said, I love the art team. Some of the stories left me kind of cold. That kind of super grim stuff and the eugenics and killing everybody isn't my Marvel Comics jam.
I mean, the Amarita stuff, I mean, like, I'm invested there.
Yeah.
No doubt.
You
want
to know.
But yeah, if you're going to give one of these issues to Super Steve, you tell him to read the Speedball issue.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah. Oh, good point. Maybe we should have saved that one. But yeah, any final thoughts on these, Kevin? This little segment, we're heading into, you know, the team doesn't know it. They're dropping seeds everywhere and having things go. But it's, you know, we know in hindsight that there isn't too much left. The next segment we're going to pick up has a three-parter with Web of Scarlet Spider.
We're not reading all three parts, are we?
I am, but you're not. And then we have a four-part Future Shock. So, but we've had a little bit spoiled, you know, with that's the downside with time slip. But yeah, I'm, like I said, the art team is carrying the stories I'm not enjoying as much, so.
Yeah, I mean, these are better than those Nova issues we read last time.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, it's very 90s, but there's still things to enjoy.
Yeah, yeah. But like I said, solid effort. Zercher and Peepoy are bringing it every time. I approve. These are on the Unlimited, too, which makes it low cost to you folks. So check
yeah, they
them
must
out.
Have been in the Omnibus.
I wonder if they're part of the Clone Wars thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's why they got bumped to the top of the order.
Yeah, because 67... is the last one that's currently in the system, which is fine. Like I said, the other ones will be, people, don't worry. They're gonna add, like, usually when they add the omnibuses, if they're in them, they put them on because they got to clean them up and everything, but it's the last of the one that's in it. Then we go to the paper issues. But if you're following at home, the four issue, or at least the first four issues of Web of Scarlet Spider are on the Unlimited as well. So 3 and 4 would be the ones that tie in if you want to follow it home. But, yeah, I think we're going to do another segment, Kevin. I think we'll continue.
All right, we can do this.
Yeah, we just got to trick Super Steve to show back up.
Well, we can trick him eventually. We'll say we're doing a Howard the Duck thing. And then it'll be like an intervention. And we'll be like, oh, sorry about that, Super Steve, but you got to read the last issue.
All right, thanks, everybody.